As much as I like to fight everyone, I'm having a pretty good time here. Why you mad? Why you mad? Why you mad?
Hey, Louisa, what's up?
Hi, Jake. How you doing?
Good, man. I'm just chilling.
I'm doing pretty well. Not to like brag or throw it out there, but I guess I need this notebook. Hold on. Sorry. I'm doing okay. I'm like a poster child right now for get medicated, do exercise, eat well, have sex, and you'll feel good.
Yeah.
And so then I'm like, oh, I don't really have anything to tweet about. I don't really have anything. I'm like, Jake, this is a you episode. I plan nothing. I'm not mad about anything.
Yeah.
So what's going on with you, Jake? What do you want to talk about?
Okay. That's an interesting conundrum right in itself, right? That's the thing comedians always say. Oh, I'm only funny when I'm miserable. And then
I know.
When you're happy, you feel like guilty about it because you're like, it's going to make me not interesting and shit. It's
no, listen, stupid. Man, I'm not a comedian, which is why I'm like, first of all, I'm still funny. Second of all, because I still have to be funny like dating and during sex. I mean, look, if you're not laughing while having sex, you're not having good sex. So, sorry. But I'm still funny.
You shouldn't be dying laughing.
Yeah, no. There's good dying laughing while you're fucking. Come on,
that's possible. That's true. I'm just
and
imagining.
It's like not laughing at anyone, right? It's like a laughing together. And then what was the second thing? Oh, and I don't feel guilty about it. I just...
Well, you're not a comedian. You're not a neurotic.
Right, weirdo. Right. Exactly. Yeah. So I just feel very just open to the universe. I'm going to be the spiritual Zhuzhi one right now. It's like... I feel very spring and like open to talking to people about what's going on with them. Very interested still in the in all the things I'm interested in. But
this is perfect then.
I want to hear what's going on with you. Well, tell me.
Because the thing is, the reason that comedians get like that is that I think that creative types generally, and especially comedians for some reason, the neurotic thing is we all, even people that don't know the language for this, get really into this idea of like what Freud called sublimation, you know, which is like if you have something that normally would be diagnosed as a problem, well, then you turn it into create something out of it, you know. Weird examples I remember from taking this in college is like it goes as far as like, are you a fucking serial killer? Join the army, you know, like you take the thing and then you invert it and then it becomes productive, and somehow that's the general theory. And so I think that a lot of comedians, people that arrive at comedy for the same reason, which is that they, you know, have figured out how to internalize a thing that was done to them and then put it out back, and suddenly you've done like this interesting quantum dialectical thing where you're like, haha, see, I made it into something out of nothing, right? Or something positive out of negative. And like, you know, I mean, that's what fucking Nanette was saying isn't possible and stuff. And that's why I think that, you know, you should criticize her for saying that, because it's like clearly worked for so many people, right? And the other thing is like, so I've been thinking about this a lot because I'm going to bring up some stuff we talked about on previous episodes. I've been beating these ideas to death. I'm in a weird space right now where I'm just fucking examining just every part of a thing. And so I'm still thinking about that Little Nas X thing where he's like, you know, basically saying like, hey, look, the church has used this imagery of the devil to like, you know, to terrorize me. Now that I'm an adult and I'm grown, I understand that it's not real. Haha, I flipped it back around, right? He's very much doing sublimation, right? And what's funny is that, you know, we're having this ridiculous satanic panic culture war. We're not having it, but like conservatives are having it over Lil Nas X. And it's like, talk to any metal musician. They'll tell you, yeah, we've already been through this. This is what we do, right? I mean, this is what all that fucking metal shit is. It's also what goth stuff is, and it's what edgelord comedian shit is. It's all the same fucking thing. It's turning the, it's also kind of what like gangster culture kind of is.
Yeah.
All of it. So it's very common in creativity, right?
Totally. And not just in creativity, but like generationally. Like, okay, I have thought how weird it is that there are like goths of multiple generations. you know, and they're basically the same. Like, their music changed a little bit and maybe their style. I don't know, but they, like, basically fit into the same. And that's pretty weird, don't you think?
That,
like, it just produced, and not just in multiple generations in America, but then in also in other countries. Because you said you watched the LA Hotel thing, whatever it's called.
I watched the Cecil Hotel thing. That's kind of why I started thinking about the goth stuff.
Yeah, and Morbid, you know, Morbid, the guy that was like a performer that just happened to be staying at the Cecil.
He's like a Mexican black metal guy.
He's a Mexican black metal dude. And like, dude, Mexicans, like, for some weird reason, like, Argentinians are also really into metal. Peruvians, you know, there's like big sects in certain Latin American countries. But it's so funny that I think a lot of America doesn't realize that there's like a big metal contingent in certain Latin American populations, you know, and that it comes from the same exact place as being a goth in America.
Right.
Of like, yeah, of what you're talking about, of like, this is the symbolism that oppressed me. I'm going to fucking embody it and fucking subsume it. And
literally, the Catholic Church was thrust upon the entire fucking quarter of the world, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the entirety of South America had this, has this trauma of the Catholic Church being thrust upon you and then, like, internalized. And then, you know, it's generations and generations down. It's like, well, now it's your parents or they bought into it and they fucking love it. And now you're not that.
And even when people are like, oh, we don't really buy it, it's just, you know, for family and for routine and tradition and whatever. It's like, oh, but that means you still are buying it.
Right.
You're still buying into, like, I'm a devil because I'm gay, or, you know, or I'm going to hell because I'm different, or, you know, all this stuff. It's really messed up. And so what did you think about, not to jump right into this, but this was the reason I told you to watch this Cecil Hotel shit.
Yeah.
Is specifically because of the storyline with Morbid. Because what happened there was this, like, real material reality, like, backlash to his persona that was symbolic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he's, like, a Mexican metal dude who embodies this whole death metal fucking look and shit. And all his videos are blood and gore and whatever. And he performs in various places. So he was in L.A. touring or something. And he stayed at the Cecil Hotel, not even at the same time as the girl who got killed. But he posted a video. I think he put it up the same week that the girl got killed or something like that. So all these internet sleuths who think they know what the fuck they're talking about decided that because of his iconography and, like, how his videos were and how he presented himself, he must be the murderer. You know, like, they took one for one your, like, projected persona that is a purely a performance, and they fucking translated it into you must want to actually kill someone.
Yeah. Well, you know what's so funny about this? It's like, so this guy's image, for anyone listening that hasn't watched this documentary, doesn't know what we're talking about, there's this hotel in LA called the Cecil Hotel that's on, like, fucking Skid Row, and it's, like, historically just been a fucking place where, you know, people will hang out and smoke crack and stuff like that. And there's interesting history to it. The documentary is fucking great. It goes through a lot of the stuff. Various serial killers have lived there. Richard Ramirez lived there. And they try to kind of revamp it every now and then and sell it. And then this thing happened in 2013 where this 21-year-old Canadian girl went to the Cecil Hotel. It's fucking disappeared while she was staying there. No one could figure it out. There's really weird, grainy camera footage of her from an elevator. She gets into the elevator. You can't tell what's happening.
She's disoriented, but she's, like, talking to someone.
Yeah, it's, like, really hard to tell what's happening. Yeah. And then she disappears, and it turns out later on, like, weeks later, the water in the hotel starts to turn black, like a fucking horror movie. Yeah.
Oh.
And then... So they send a handyman.
One of the maintenance dudes. Yeah. Yeah, they go up to the water tower to check it.
And her dead body's in the water tower.
Yeah.
And so it's this great thing that went viral and took on this, like, viral, like, life of its own because the police never solved it, but they released the video. So people will fucking pick apart the video and go, what does this mean? You know, what is the sequence of the buttons she pressed? Is that, like, a code? Yeah. There's all this fucking crazy shit, right?
Or what she was wearing and all this, like,
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so they never really figured it out. And the conclusion that the police department came to is just that it's a suicide. But the internet sleuths, the web sleuths, as they call them in the documentary, you know, have all these different theories. And this documentary, honestly, it was cool, but it was a little propaganda-ish because what it did is it demonized. It was like, don't do the detective work yourself. It's the job of the police, you know. But in this case, I mean, they made a pretty good point about the internet because the people that are trying to figure out what happened, they destroyed this guy Morbid's life because what happened with Morbid is that he had stayed in the Cecil Hotel exactly a year before her
Talk about cancel culture.
Right, mm-hmm. They totally canceled him.
Yeah.
He had stayed exactly a year. He wasn't there when she was there. He was there a year before, and then that went, like, a year later, he fucking came out with a video that has, like, they were just, like, some vague connection.
It had, like, scenes or something, yeah.
So somebody fucking put a bunch of yarns on corkboard and shit and was like, I figured out he magically killed her. Like, he was in Mexico at the time. There's no way he killed her, but they were like, he must have used black magic or something to kill her, right? So what's really funny is all this happens, and this fucking, the guy looks like the fucking Crow. There's another movie I watched this week.
A Mexican crow. He's hot.
Yeah, he's fucking cool. He's like an intense metal, you know, aggro fucking doom guy. And
then when they talk to him as real himself.
This is what I'm saying. You expect him to be like, fuck, kill you.
Yeah.
And he's so vulnerable. He's like, oh my God. Like, I didn't know. Like, I didn't kill this woman. And he's like so hurt by it.
He's an artist. He's like, I was an artist who was doing a thing. And then now people think this of me and they're calling me a murderer. It seemed like he wanted to cry. And I'm like, oh no, Morbid, don't cry.
Yeah. No, by the end of it, you're like, no, Morbid, it's going to be okay. You can make music videos again where you're ripping people's heads off.
Exactly. But it's crazy. It was like such a thing to see in terms of cancel culture shit, but also this thing of like, even you're right to connect it with the Lil Nas X thing. I think it comes from the same place. And then it's so weird that it can go either the Lil Nas X way where it's like, wow, that's so impressive, or the Morbid way where it's like, we think you murdered this girl.
Well, no, but it's the same because Lil Nas X.
No, it's the same, but in society, it could go either way.
But Louisa, what I'm saying is Lil Nas X is currently being attacked by like conservatives and shit. Yeah.
Oh, right.
They don't think
he's a murderer.
They think he's a murderer. They literally think the devil is real. They think he fucked the devil. Right, like, I forgot
that it's literal for some of them.
It's not the exact same situation, but it's like, no, you're being like persecuted by people who have got the wrong idea for the same fucking reason.
Well, I guess
the
power dynamics I don't think are the same. I mean, I know that the people persecuting Morbid is also not the same as to the level of like having Fox News and everyone attacking you the way that Lil Nas X has, but he's also bigger. So I guess maybe you're right. It is a comparable argument, but they're just a different level.
The similarity here
is
that in both of these cases, you have a person who has sublimated their trauma and turned it into a thing, and then people don't understand that thing. They're taking it literally, and they're fucking attacking him over it, and you're not seeing the human behind it, right?
Yeah.
And, like, I guess, yeah, the real human and the vulnerability that he showed is really interesting to me, because it made me think about something else, right? Which I talked about this last week. I can't remember. I was kind of drunk. But I just watched fucking Spring Breakers, this movie, and we did a whole podcast in the Antifada about it. Beat the fucking shit out of that movie. Like, I thought about every angle of it. I fucking love that movie. I think it's great. But there's something in it that occurred to me after I had been thinking about it for fucking a week and a half, and after I'd been thinking about all this stuff and the Lil Nas X stuff, and it finally hit me, so I just wanted to get it out of my system and put it on a podcast.
Yeah, do it.
Okay, so have you seen that movie? I forgot.
I'm looking it up on Google right now because I'm literally like, I've never heard of this movie.
Spring Breakers? It's fucking great.
Spring Breakers?
Yeah.
No, I've never seen this before. It probably came out when I was in grad school. What year? 2012, yeah.
2012, yeah.
Yeah, I have like a big black hole of knowledge.
Okay, well, if you're bored, you want to watch a movie sometime.
Who is that? Matthew Lillard? No, that's like another dude. James Franco,
it's James
really?
Franco.
Oh my God.
James Franco plays like, I think I got canceled for calling him a wigger. I didn't know you're not supposed to say that.
You're not supposed to say that because it's basically you saying the N-word.
But he's a white guy. I don't know.
But yes, I get you. A white guy who thinks he's black and does black.
I fucking said it all the time growing up. Didn't know it was a weird thing. Sorry. He's based on this rapper called Riff Raff from Houston, and in this movie, like, basically the premise of the movie, I'm sorry, I'm gonna ruin it, but I'm not gonna ruin the ending.
No, I don't care. I will completely forget right after.
Four spring break girls go crazy, and they go on spring break, and they rob a place, and they sort of like go through this experience where, you know, some of them are like, let's fucking start robbing people, and then like one of them is like having a crisis, it's like, I want to go home, and like, it's kind of interesting, right? And then they go to a party and they get arrested at the party, and then this guy like bails them out of jail, and it's this James Franco, his name's Alien, he's like a white rapper guy, and they're like, why would he bail us out, you know? And he's like kind of like,
it's scary,
he's like kind of exploitive, right? Well, then you come to find out, they go and hang out with him, and you come to find out That his story is that he was kind of trained in, you know, being a gangster, like drug dealing and stuff like that, by this other guy who's played by, I forgot the name of the rapper, but Gucci Mane, I think? I can't remember.
Gucci Mane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I said, right? Did I say man?
You said man, but
no,
it's Mane.
I purposely said Mane because somebody said ma'am on the podcast earlier. Uh-oh. Okay, fuck it. I guess now I just pronounced Mane. It weird. I said yeah. Mane. I am cool. I am not a fucking dork.
Okay.
So anyway, Gucci Mane plays this character named Archie, right? So
okay.
Archie's a black guy who's a fucking drug dealer, and he's like the drug kingpin. He raised up Alien as a gangster, right? But then
like
Alien
vouched for him and shit. You mean he, not he like raised him as a child?
Not as a child, but he like taught him how to fucking do crime
okay,
and shit.
Gotcha,
right?
Gotcha.
And he, but then like they start to get into a fight because aliens start
territory.
To get a little bit too big for his britches. Yeah, and he's fuck you, I made mm-hmm. you who you are. Yeah. So then these girls come along, and in the process of hanging out with them, the whole time in the movie, you think he's going to exploit them, right? He's like, you're scared. You're like, what is this guy going to do to these girls? Well, they have this crazy fucking scene where he's like out there. He's got this house. He's got all this excessive shit. And he's got fucking guns laying around. And then it's like, who's going to shoot who? What's going on? They start kind of like making out and fucking his shit. And then one of them sticks the gun in his mouth. And they start fucking him in the face with a gun. It's crazy, right? And it's like, what the fuck? And the whole time you're like, are they going to kill him? Is he going to turn this around and kill one of them? And what happens is he just goes, I fucking love you. And then they sort of team up and then like all this other stuff happens, right? But yeah. What's interesting about this, because this happens around the second act mark of the movie. I was thinking about this. I fucking figured it out. So Archie, the original gangster, is like, why are you a gangster? Sublimation. Like, something bad happened to you. You're in a position of poverty. You turned that into a thing. It's fucking weird and bad, ultimately, but, like, you know, what? This is how this works. Like, the original gangster culture comes from people that had their back against the wall, like, socioeconomically and stuff, and they're just like, I guess I'm fucking this or die. Like, become the monster or fucking die, right?
Right.
And it's cool, and we all understand that it's cool, but when white people adopt it, there's always something off about it because you're implying a struggle that doesn't exist for you. You know what
this
I mean?
This is why I hate that fucking Walter White show. What's it called?
Breaking Bad, yeah.
Breaking Bad, yeah. This is one of my unpopular opinions. I fucking hate that show.
Well, the Latin gangsters in it are so, like, cartoony.
No, it's not just that, Jake. There's, like, a whole thing. Like, nobody write me a fucking email about this. I don't want to talk about it. But, like, there was something exactly in the way that you're saying of, like, appropriation?
Yeah, affectation maybe?
Yeah,
something like that.
Exactly. Where there was this thing of like, with Walter White, they framed it as like, oh, this poor white teacher, he would only do this horrible thing because he lost his job and his wife has cancer and he has no choice and he's going to lose his, you know, like they would it. Oh my God, you could all understand this version of being socioeconomically up against the wall.
Yeah.
Where do you think every brown and black gangster
came from? Right.
Except that exact same position, right? First of all. Second of all, this fucking chemistry teacher decides that he's going to take on the whole Mexican cartel, Jake.
Yeah.
And he fucking outsmarts them and he fucking doesn't get murdered several times where I'm like, Jesus Christ, are you kidding me? You would have been murdered.
Yeah.
I hate this. I hate that they, like, framed it as this, like, hero. And there's a bunch of people. And, like, the writers, they insist that he was not supposed to be a hero, right? But everybody who loves the show thinks Walter White is a hero.
If your show was good, that wouldn't be people would like who the hero is supposed to be, you know?
Exactly. But, so, you know, but it speaks to this whole thing of, like, intent only goes so far, right? Like, you can intend whatever you want with the way that you're depicting this character. But ultimately, you depicted a white, middle class, you know, like average, regular fucking dude who, if his back was to the wall, not only could he do what every Latino and black gangster has had to do, but he could do it better.
There's just, there's so much shit like
better.
That. Yeah, it's like, imagine how good he could do it. Why?
I hate that show.
Yeah.
It sucks. I even hated the wife, but like for a different reason. Oh, whatever. We're not going to get into it. Go on.
But, well, yeah, no, but that's good. Yeah. That's a good example, right? Because in order to make Breaking Bad, you had to add a fictional element, which is enough circumstances that would lead to this sublimation being able to be possible from like a guy like that. Because it's not. You're in a comfortable position. You're not able to, which is so when you have like this fucking alien guy. Right. I think I couldn't shake when I was watching. I was like, that's what's so annoying about this. When white people affect this gangster culture, which they do all the time, the reason it's so obnoxious is because you're implying that you overcame something that you didn't like have to. Right.
Exactly.
So he's living in this space. Right. He knows that he's a fraud. But then check this out. When that woman fucks him in the face with that gun and he suddenly goes, oh, my God, like, thank you. I think it's because she's finally put him in a position where he can actually be vulnerable, which is not having his race challenged, it's having his gender challenged, right? It's having masculinity challenged. And I think that's why he's
so... he got turned on by that.
It's like kind of like I think he got turned on, sure, but I think it's more than that. I think it's he's like, wait a minute, you gave me an actual fucking... I, for once in my life, feel like I could actually be like, you know, like this isn't fake. Like I'm not like... Because usually he's not actually operating on any inherent risk, you know? So he's, like, kind of a fraud. So there's kind of a trope. This happens in other stories, I want to say. Like, a thing where, like, you know, a really tough gangster, somebody hits him, and then he bleeds for the first time in his life, and he's like, oh, no one's ever actually made me bleed before, you know? Like, that sort of thing. Or, like, the reason he's so into it is because he's like, you fucking gave me, like, an actual, like, thing to express that I have been challenged about, that I feel vulnerable. Because, like, just being a guy is, on some level, inherently fucked up and weird and vulnerable. You have to be vulnerable about it at some level or whatever. And I think that's why he was, like, great. Like, oh, my God, now, like, I feel like a full human. And because he knew he was, like, bullshitting the whole fucking time or whatever. It's crazy.
I'm going to have to watch this, though, because this sounds, even without watching it, to me, it sounds already like it reeks of, yes, he might have had that feeling, but then it becomes a, like, a sublimation, I guess, of another thing where it's like, oh, this person is validating a thing for me, so now that's why they're important for me and still therefore like a fake thing.
Oh, don't get me wrong. None of the characters in this are good. Like, the movie is about a bunch of people and it's, you just look at it and you go like, wow, all of society is really fucked up.
Well, that's why it sounds good, honestly, because here's the thing. When you say like, obviously being a man is like fraught with all these complications. Dude, being a human is fraught with all these complications of any gender, of any race.
All of them.
Yeah, that's what's crazy is that whenever I hear all this discourse around movies and representation, I'm like, man, if we just realized that, like, literally every gender and every class and every fucking nationality or whatever is going through some fucking fucked up shit.
That's what empathy is.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And it's crazy that we can't do that, like, all the time. Because every single person is, like, on some level experiencing stuff like this. But, like, it's weird, though, because you do... notice, I mean, why the fuck did you hate Walter White so much? Because there's like a part of it where you're like, ah, like it's annoying when someone is operating, like they're stealing something somehow. They're getting away with like extra surplus, you know, somehow, because it's like they're putting off that they deserve more empathy than they do for a reason that they don't or something like that. And it's, you know, it's just bad art. It's just like, well, this is not fucking good art.
That's one way, that's one way I hadn't thought of framing it before, because I hadn't put it on, like, a person, like, taking on these characteristics. I had thought of it more of, like, the stories that already existed in the world being, like, reframed as though, like, you know, like, a Mexican who, you know what circular migration is?
No.
No? Okay, so before, like, the 50s and 60s, I believe, before the U.S. started, like, these, like, very strict immigration laws, especially over the Mexican-U.S. border, what actually happened in America was called circular migration.
Oh, wait, I think I read about this,
Yeah, which means that there was, like, a large population of Mexicans and also Canadians, honestly, because for, like, log work and that kind of shit, they perform circular migration, which means that they would come to the U.S. for certain seasons where their work would be applicable, you know, whether it was logging or picking lettuce or whatever the fucking work was. They would go to California, whatever. do their work for whatever months that season ran, collect all their money, and go back to Mexico or go back to Canada where their families were, and they would reinvigorate their economies and ours at the same time by circulating money across the border. You understand me?
Yeah.
There was no problem of like, ooh, the Mexicans are coming here to take our jobs, because they were literally coming here to do a job no American wanted and then going back home. You know what I mean? But then, it was probably the 80s. I think it was Reagan was like the biggest one. Whatever. I don't even remember. I didn't prepare for this. But some fucking American president made a big deal about how this is how we have to stop all the crime and shit in America, is by regulating the border. So they put this like plan into place of like, we're going to stop people from coming in. And that's when a bunch of foreigners basically had to make the decision of like, well, do I stay in Mexico or Canada, or do I just like stay legally in America because that's where I'll have jobs, you know, seasonally. So that was the big growth of influx of illegal or undocumented immigrants staying in America, is because you closed the border, you fucking idiots. Not because it was open before. Wait, but I forgot why I was telling you this. What were we talking about before?
I was talking about...
Oh, about Walter White and shit, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, whatever. So, point being that Mexicans, Latinos of all kinds, Black people within America have been put into these situations where their narratives already existed, Jake, for hundreds of years in terms of... I have no other options. I have no other jobs. The government's not going to help me. I don't have rich family. I have children to take care of. I have a sick family member. All that shit already fucking existed. And it is the reason why a bunch of Latino and Black people made the choice to be like, yeah, I will sell drugs on the street. I'll become a gangbanger. I'll rob banks. I'll fucking be a drug trafficker. All these things, right?
Yeah.
Those narratives existed. And then this Breaking Bad and the other examples we've talked about is like, what you did was not just appropriate an experience, but like literally whitewash it, right? Like make it like, here's a version that's permissible.
Yeah.
If the person was a teacher before this and he was totally like, oh, he lived in a fucking fenced off place in a suburb and somewhere in America, you identify with that, right? And now he has this problem and this problem and this problem, and he has no other choice. So that's why and now all of a sudden all of America loves Walter White and thinks he's a fucking awesome guy. It's like, okay, so why do you not have that empathy for every single person who actually lived, like, not fictional? Yeah.
You know what this reminds me of?
Yeah.
How, like, old white people can only admit that the only rapper they can admit is good is Eminem. Because they're like, well, okay, I'm comfortable with this. If it's a story of a white guy using all this stuff to
doing
overcome.
This, exactly. You know? And that 8 Mile story, right? Or like, oh, he overcame and he crossed the other side. And it's like, how many fucking Black people do you think had to overcome and cross the fucking rails and all that shit?
Yeah.
And you're not singing their praises.
To his credit, I think Eminem has a very good sense of humor about his career right now, because he's quickly become like he did not age well, and he makes jokes about himself and shit, which I think is cool. Ooh, you know what? Before we leave the Cecil Hotel thing, though, I got to tell you, I got a little bit caught into the online sleuthing myself, because the part of the story is that when she was staying at the Cecil Hotel. You know, the story also, by the way, is like she's, you know, off her meds and stuff. So they think she went kind of crazy. And then there's all these questions of like, oh, do you see ghosts when you go crazy? I don't know, maybe, you know. So, but she went to a TV taping. And so all these people online have been trying to figure out what TV taping they went to, because they don't say what it is in any of the documentaries or anything. And I think that they purposely kind of can't or something. But I looked it up, and the consensus on Reddit is that she went and watched Conan, and when she went to Conan, that's when she wrote a note and she tried to give it to Conan O'Brien to read, that had all this crazy stuff, right? And she had to be escorted out of the fucking show. Yeah.
So you think to me it seemed likely that it was that was the explanation, that she went off her meds and she was like,
it seems likely, but also like, never trust a documentary, man. I mean, they just make the argument for you, like, it's really it's really easy to get swept up and who fucking knows. But that's what it seems like to me, yeah.
Yeah, well, and you know what? This harkens to me back to a pre-internet time, you know, and like, I don't know if you remember such a time where you would be like wondering about something and you would ask your smartest friend and they'd be like, I don't know, I think this is the answer. And then you just wouldn't know because you didn't have Google. So you would just be like, I think this is the answer.
Yeah.
You grew up not knowing. And so sometimes I think it's like, especially with these kind of things where you have to like, they want you to make a decision with all these true crime things and be on the side of something. Sometimes it's okay to just be like, I guess we'll never know. Like, you don't have to know everything. This is just the facts that are known, and who knows what the truth was at the end.
Yeah. It's fun to, you know, imagine and try to figure out. That's what QAnon's all about, right? Just fun is just the sleuthing.
Should I watch that documentary? Is it good?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It has a banger theme song, and it it's fucking weird, man. It follows like weird thing about QAnon is that like if you have followed at all over the last few years, there's like really good podcasts about it, stuff like QAnon Anonymous, and they interview a lot of those guys in this documentary and stuff. It's very clear that it's probably one of like these three message board operators that that run like 8chan. And it's basically who they focus on in this documentary, but it's a documentary where they get like, they go hang out with them and the whole time it's like, they're, you could tell they're trolling the documentarian and the documentarian is playing dumb. So they'll do it more and stuff. And it's like, so clearly it's one of these guys, but it's just like, which one is it? I don't fucking know. And then at one point they make a really good argument in the documentary that it's Steve Bannon. And you're like, holy shit, it's Steve Bannon. But then the documentarian walks you back through with, see how that solid that argument sounded? That argument was meant to sound that solid because it was a distraction away from the fact that it was probably this other guy or whatever. It was really interesting. God. I don't know. I think it's like clearly these fucking weird 8chan guys that live in the Philippines.
But what's their motivation? Would it just for fun?
Well, I mean, the thing is, they don't want you to know their motivation. They're very trolly. Every time you ask them a question about it, they're like, well, it's just free speech. But, you know, but also, I don't know about politics or whatever. But it sounds like their motivation is chaos in the way that, I mean, honestly, on some level, they're like chaotic comedians. Like a lot of trolls, honestly, are, if you ask them what their motivation is, it's not, you know, get anyone elected or whatever. It's, they don't think it's ideological. It's just like they just enjoy like doing this stuff, which I think still has like probably a motivation. It's just not an express one. It's not something they really understand. Like I know people who just think they're the Joker. You know, they just think like, what I do is I get on the internet and I make fake accounts and I fuck with people and it's just like fun, you know. It's a way you can self-identify, which I guess whenever I meet somebody like that, I think, okay, you're saying it's this, but it's actually because you have issues with your mother, you know, like you don't understand what's actually causing you to need to do all this stuff and for it to feel good, you know.
Yeah.
Sorry, all the Freud in this episode. I know we're not fans of him.
I'm not. Yeah.
No, one is. He's not good. Yeah. He does not age well.
I mean, he wasn't wrong about a lot, but like we just took it too far.
You know, he's like the guy that cracked open a certain thing, and then everyone else who built on that is more correct than he was. You know, opened to the door. That guy to the inner world.
Exactly. Yeah. So, what else have you been doing and watching? What's going on?
Fuck, man. I mean, I watched The Crow the other day. I got into the goth thing while I was watching Cecil Hotel, and I was like, I should really like feel this out. So I watched The Crow, which was cool, but it was have you ever seen it?
Yeah, but does it hold up? I haven't seen it since like 98 or whenever.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fucking awesome movie. Yeah. Like, it has visually so good and so 90s and
stuff. I remember nothing about it except like a fucking warehouse and him falling through a window or something. I don't even know.
Looks like my apartment. It's so fun to watch.
Yeah, exactly. Like, totally. Like your apartment. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what it is, though? It's kind of a bummer in with 2021 eyes. Fucking Copaganda, man. It's a superhero movie.
Oh yeah,
it's total Copaganda, right? It sucks. Yeah. He's like, it's the same formula as every fucking superhero movie that's like, oh, there's all this crime. Where's all this crime coming from? Well, the cops are here, but they're not doing a good enough job, you know, so we need this clown guy, this like goth clown guy to fucking
I gotta rewatch it because I have like, if anything, I've doubled down on how watching every procedural ever made is my job. Mm-hmm. I watch all of them. And did you know, so let me give you an update on procedural world.
Okay.
Did you know that, do you know who Elliot Stabler is?
Yeah, of course.
Yes. Do you know that Stabler returned to the world of Law and Order this week?
I didn't know that.
Ah, Jake, big news, big news. Actually, what's trending on Twitter is Stabler's butt. He has a real nice butt. And I guess they were recording in Manhattan this week, and somebody took a picture of Stabler on set, who is, what's his real name?
Chris
Maloney.
Yeah, Maloney.
Yeah.
He's in Happy. He's great.
Yes, he's a great actor, dude. He's a comedic, he's an amazing comedic actor. So it's like so bittersweet that SVU was the thing that made him famous, because he's better at every other comedic. He's also in Harold and Kumar. Do you remember that?
Yeah, he's also in Wet Hot American Summer.
Yeah, Wet Hot American Summer. He's an amazing comedic actor, but he also has great buns, and somebody took a picture of his butt, and then it's like on Twitter, everybody's like freaking out, being like, this is America's butt, whatever, and some people think that it's like a fake butt, and it's like, no, dude, have you not watched SVU? That's his butt. But anyway, that's not the news item. The news item is, for the purposes of our conversation. So basically what happened is the Wolf, what's the guy's name that makes the show?
Dick Wolf.
Dick Wolf. So yeah. There is a new Dick Wolf show called Law and Order Organized Crime. Right? Because before we have had regular Law and Order, Law and Order Special Victims Unit, Law and Order Criminal Intent, which was like the major case unit. And now we have Law and Order Organized Crime, right? Which is presumably going to be about Russian and Italian mobs, right? So in order to introduce the new series, they did a crossover episode with SVU, where Stabler comes back to SVU, Jake. And do you remember how I had been telling you that SVU, which has been on the air for like 15 or 18 years or whatever, went from like horrible propaganda where we thought they were heroes because they literally broke the law and beat the shit out of suspects and, you know, like murdered people basically without respecting their rights and all this shit.
Yeah.
To like the most recent seasons of SVU are them apologizing for the NYPD being racist, you know, like really trying to fix what they think is wrong. Dude, they had like a whole episode where Ice-T arrested a black guy at a crime scene, and the black guy was not, like, it turned out he had nothing to do with the crime.
Yeah.
So then that black guy sued the NYPD because of profiling and, like, you falsely arrested me. So then it became this whole conversation of, like, is the NYPD racist if it was a black cop that arrested the black guy? And like, oh. Yeah. So they're, like, really in turmoil over their whole cop identity. And then they decide to start this new show. So the crossover episode is Stabler comes to New York to visit for some shit, right? And then his fucking wife gets murdered, Jake. But hold on, I went too far because this is what's crazy, right? So Stabler comes to New York, and then his wife gets blown up by accident. She goes to get in the car.
She gets blown up.
Yeah, yeah. She goes to get in the car, and it was his car, so obviously it was meant for him, but she gets blown up, so she's in the hospital in ICU, So Stabler has to join the investigation with SVU for who did this. And Olivia Benson, right, his old partner, she is now the captain of SVU. So then she's like then telling him like, hey, you can't be how you used to be. You know, like we respect the rules now and the law. We believe in the fucking suspect's right to fucking all this shit. Like you can't beat people up. And he's like, yeah, of course. Do you think I haven't learned and I haven't changed? And so the whole fucking episode is about him, how he was a bad cop before, even though he was like the hero cop of the series.
Yeah. Jake.
That's just crazy. So it's like all of them dealing with like, oh, he was the best ever cop in SVU, but also he did everything the wrong way. We can't have that anymore.
Yeah.
So they have this tough conversation with him. And then at the end of that episode, they fucking, his wife dies, which is this like usual tool to be like, okay, the bad guy, you notice that in every narrative.
Yeah.
If you did something bad, you have to pay for it in some way where you lose something else, right? That's how fiction and narratives work.
Right.
So because he had some debt to pay because of the type of cop and person he was before, they murdered his wife. And so then now we have some sympathy for him. You get me?
Yeah.
And now they can start this whole other show of him being the main cop based around these investigations of organized crime, right? Because it was the Italian mafia basically who killed his wife.
Yeah.
And it's just really crazy to watch these cop shows in 2020 where they're they're trying to play both sides in a very interesting way, where they're still trying to be like, oh, this person's a hero, but also they recognize that they used to do things the wrong way. You know, like, they were part of the good old boys club, but now they're trying to change it. It's so fucking crazy. It's insane. Yeah. But anyway, Stabler has a nice butt.
Do you think, like, if you were someone who had never seen Law and Order before and you sat down and watched it in order from episode one to now, would it make any sense given that, like, oh, this guy's the hero, and then suddenly it's, ah, you were too wild when you were a bad cop, because it's like reflective of the real world.
To be honest with you, the only way that it makes sense is if you watched the original Law and Order. Did you ever watch the original Law and Order?
Not really. No.
Okay, so the original Law and Order was, like, much more formulaic. It was very much like the first half was about the cops. Like, that's why it was called Law and Order. Right? Because the first half was law, so it was like, well, I guess it was order first, which is the cops, right? Yeah. So it was the cops would solve a crime, they would arrest somebody, and they would get arraigned. And then the second half of the episode would be the DAs and shit, right, dealing with taking them to court. And it was a very good show precisely because of the fact that it was very, like, it really wasn't about it didn't make the prosecutors or the cops heroes. It made it very much about each story of how different crimes are different and the people who do them are different and the outcomes of trials are different.
Yeah.
And then it was only with, like, the later years of original Law and Order with Sam Watterson became he's like a cool DA. We love him now and we always think he's the good guy. And then after that, so there was a distinct change in the 90s, like late 90s. And then I think 9/11 made it worse, where it made it more of a thing where we now make these people hero figures.
Yeah.
The Law and Order pre 9/11 was not like that. It made, like, the Law and Order pre 9/11, the prosecutors lost cases, the cops got fired for fucking shit up. You know, like, they weren't heroes. It was very much, yeah. And then post 9/11, it became they're infallible. Like, even the reason that people like SVU, dude, Elliot Stabler, he straight up beat the shit out of suspects, are like rape suspects, and you're watching and you're like, yeah, go Elliot, because you, like, know that he's a rapist, you know.
Yeah,
but technically he's abusing all the laws. You know what I mean? Well, like, the worst fucking cop.
That's how Pizzagate, yeah, and QAnon, yeah, work too, is that, yeah, like, cast your fucking opponent as the worst thing possible, a rapist, you know, a baby,
exactly,
rapist. And then, yeah, yeah, no, then it's going,
and then
go
when it's
it,
a rapist or a child abuser, then you're sitting there rooting for the cop, like, yeah, fucking shoot that guy in the face, shoot, yeah, him in the face. And then you're like, wait a minute, I'm sitting here rooting for a cop to shoot somebody in the face, like, what the fuck is happening right now? This is not what I think. And then now we've reached this new thing. I've told you about the rookie, like, there's a bunch of cop shows now that are just, like, struggling with, like, how do we include diversity, and then have you be real and speak to the fact of, like, what is it to be a black man being a cop? You know, like, they are struggling. The shows are not good. I'm not saying they're good right now, but they're, like, really trying to figure out what to do. And the Stabler thing was just so interesting because it is literally a character from 1999 that we loved.
Yeah.
Coming back and being like, no, do you think I still beat people up? I don't do that anymore. And it's like, oh, really? You don't? What changed? Like, what made you change your mind, Elliot? Tell us about that. Did you go on some Black Lives Matter trend? Like,
it's weird, though, you know, because, like, that show, it'll continue to operate as long as that there is legitimately, like, a target that the public in general is tricked into thinking is, like, the real enemy besides, mm-hmm, the police. So they're doing an episode on January 6th, the Capitol storming thing.
They just did that, yeah.
Yeah, or yeah, they did it. We're going to do a PDA about it. We haven't done it yet, but
ooh, you should have me on that.
You want to come on? Yeah, you should.
Yeah. I'm an SVU expert. I love
you,
it.
Okay, we'll do that, because the thing is, the premise of us doing PDA episodes about Law and Order is, I guess, Alex just never watched the show, and I'm always like,
really?
What the fuck? Everyone watches this.
Law and Order rules, dude. I've seen all of them. I actually just rewatched all of Criminal Intent, which is, I guess, the bad one. People don't like it, but it has Vincent D'Onofrio in it. And that's one of my boyfriends, so I love it.
Oh, I like him, but he blocked me on Twitter.
Well, he's insane. He's not a smart man, but he thinks he's a smart man. So,
yeah.
But I think this is like a thing with actors, right? Where they think they're like deeper than they are. Is that rude of me? Sorry, any actors.
No, they're totally. The best actor, the smartest actor is Anthony Hopkins, because someone once asked him, like, who he thinks you should vote for or something. And he was like, I'm a fucking actor. I'm an idiot. Why would you ask me that? And he's like this like intense Shakespearean guy. You would expect him to be like that, but he's not at all. He's flipped it entirely around.
I love it. I would throw Keanu Reeves out there because he's real in a like, I'm not going to fight with anybody kind of vibe. He's like, no, man, I do what I do. There's did you see that meme that was going around of his? There was like him during an interview and he's like, I think they asked him about whether he like fights with people online or gets into anything online. He's like, yeah, no, I'm at a place where you could tell me 1 + 1 = 5 and I'll be like, yeah, man, have a good time with that. And I'll just walk away. Like, zen. That's so zen. I aspire to be that way.
Oh, man, that's so funny.
Walk away from it.
It's crazy that there are people that have managed to stay sane as actors. I've been thinking about that a lot lately because something that happened with social media, I think, is that we are all being exposed, like almost like micro-dosed on a low level to the insanity of being famous. Some of us more than others, some of us that have gone into the business of being trying to get famous, you know, but I've been thinking a lot about how like we, you know, have just had like this like quote, you call Hollywood Holly weird, like forever we've just been like, oh yeah, those people are crazy, all everyone in Hollywood's crazy. Well, it's like, why do you think? Because of this, because of what like that does to you, that alienates you so hard.
Somebody in my private life this week said to me the phrase, they were like, oh well, you're a public figure now.
Yeah, you kind of
like,
are.
What? No, I know, but I was like, what?
Luckily,
oh my
our
God.
Show is not very successful.
I know, thank God. Don't tell anybody about this show, you guys. Keep it to yourself. Yeah, no, but it was very shocking because also, you know, I think it must be different because you guys, like, you were probably mentally prepared for some of this in some way because you were seeking it, right? Like,
yeah, I was alert and aware about what was possibly happening.
Yeah, and for me, I wasn't, you know, I very much was just like, I like talking to Jake. We can totally record this and put it out. I don't care. And I have talked to so many cool people and it's been really nice, but it's also really weird to just have random people. When I did Ari Shaffir's podcast, dude, I had some guy called my job. I worked at the Guggenheim at the time.
Whoa.
And he Googled me. I guess LinkedIn, you can find out where somebody works.
Guggenheim do you?
Yeah. So he called the Guggenheim switchboard and then like found my fucking thing and left me a voicemail. And technically, it was nice because it was him being like, oh, my God, I heard your story on this podcast. Like, it was amazing. What can I do to help you and help your mom and send you this money and whatever? And it was, like, meant nice, but it was like, dude, I don't know you. You called me at my job. This is terrifying.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is happening right now? So it is kind of strange. And I can't imagine, even if you're mentally prepared for it and you wanted it, it's probably invasive, right, in a weird kind of way.
Well, it's fucking weird. I'm not even very famous and I still feel freaked out all the time because like people in public will be like, hey, I know you, and I'll just be like, does that mean you want to kill me or you want to give me $20? Because it's like kind of a 50-50.
Could go either way.
I've literally had people come up to me and hand me money, especially right after the ice thing. Honestly, when I was on tour, people were just like, fucking dude. And it was like, cool. But then also later on, I'd have people like, you know, with much creepier like eyes looking at me and like, oh, fuck, it's weird. So we're not meant to live like this. Like, this is alienation. It's, you know, you're meant to live with 100
people.
Okay,
I know, but also isn't it a connection? Okay, because like, man, okay, allow me to bring up Nietzsche once more. Who is like my dead boyfriend, right? Because I think I brought this up before, but like one of the things I have it, Jake, I have it painted on a painting in the wall, like in my house, in a pretty discreet place where I think people don't notice that I actually oil painted a Nietzsche quote into my fucking wall. But it is a quote from Human All Too Human. It's like the last book. Well, it's like a compilation of the last shit that he wrote, right? And one of the last things that he wrote on his deathbed was this thing where he basically says that he lived his whole life without ever meeting somebody that he could connect with intellectually, and how like his entire life he felt like an outsider, and like he sought refuge and relief in art and in ideas and in books, because in real life he never found refuge and relief and identification with other people, right? He was a person who he fell in love once in his life with a woman that he wrote letters to, and then it like never worked out. He died alone. His family, like, he didn't feel ever in his entire life a genius mind that will be remembered long after you and I are forgotten.
Yeah.
He never felt like anybody in his time understood him or felt or saw the same things that he saw. We idiots of the internet age, we can be like, I like feet, and we can find other people who are like, I also like feet, you know, and it makes you feel like, oh, I'm not fucking weird and stupid. Here's my whole community of furries or whatever the fuck are we are. And so, you know, yes, it's a negative side that our private worlds might be more exposed than we expected, and that there's like demanding more than we expected, but also there's like more connection.
No, for it, that's for real. I mean, I think it literally is just, it amplifies both good and bad things. But I talk to a lot of people who tend to have this, like, you know, no, we need to destroy the internet kind of thing. Like, it's got all these side effects. Yeah. But a lot of these people, I think, don't have, like, they didn't have problems that were solved by the internet. Like, I have a lot of, I mean, obviously, fucking everyone knows I'm online all the time, but, like, that's because I have, like, social anxiety and stuff, and, like, everyone in my family's in the autism spectrum. Something's going on where I'm, like, fucking comfortable, and it's helped me find, you know, other people, and like,
other people, yeah,
and things that I thought I was the only person in the world that, like, fucking thought or, you know, felt or whatever. I mean,
same, dude.
Fuck, yeah, the internet's good for that, and people take for granted. I think some people that fucking, like, that go through life without ever having been alienated in that way take it for granted, and they assume that everyone else has lived a life frictionless and comfortable, and they don't understand that, like, yeah, there's a reason that, like, a lot of, like, I think about this a lot, and I bring it up a lot, but I guess I always think about how, like, there's a lot of hella trans people online, like, on Twitter and stuff like that, and I just always think, I think it's because the fucking world has to be really hostile to you if you're, like, trans. So you, there's a space that's more comfortable to work in. And, like, also, I read this book one time about autism and how one of the things they talk about in this book called Neurotribes is how when ham radio came out way pre-internet, there's a huge community of fucking people on ham radio. And they, like, in retrospect, it was like, oh, these people were all diagnosed with autism later because they, like, suddenly this technology gave you, like, an it completed, like, an appendage, like, a part of you. It was, like, almost like a fucking transhumanist element to it, where it's like, no, I was meant to have this fucking thing. So it's, yeah, it's got good things and bad things out of it, you know? And if you asked me if I would fucking take it or leave it or redo life without it, no, I wouldn't do, like, Ted Kaczynski move to the forest shit. It's ultimately, you know, good. But it does, the negatives are funny, too, though. Have you ever read A Confederacy of Dunces?
Only excerpts, actually.
Oh, man. Okay, so I just...
Should I read it?
I just gave my copy to Sean KB because he was like, hey, what's a novel I should read? And I was like, oh, my God, you. Everyone I know, suddenly, everyone should read this book. It's the funniest novel ever written. It's the best comedic novel ever written, I think. And it's about a guy who is like... He's very much like a podcaster type character. Like, he's like this angry intellectual. He speaks in his own weird made up fucking terms and stuff. And he writes these manifestos and shit all day. They're just about like fucking whatever. And he's a lunatic. But he thinks he's like a really intellectual, and he's like, you know, just very disconnected from people. And he lives in New Orleans, and he, you know, he's like, going into New Orleans, and he's on a quest to get a job. And he's like a grown-up, in his 30s, loser who lives with his mom, but he fancies himself, like, the smartest philosopher of his time and all this stuff. It's really fucking funny. But also, in itself, like, you can tell that this fucking alienation came from the soul of the guy who wrote it. Because the guy who wrote it, John Kennedy Toole... He fucking wrote it, and then he fucking the manuscript sat in his room, and I think he killed himself. He died, and I think it was by suicide. And when his mom was going through all his shit, she found this manuscript and she like just on a whim read it. And then she said that she like couldn't stop turning the pages. Like, this is like an excellent American novel, right? And so she fucking went on this quest to publish it, and she had to convince all these different people, like, no, you have to read it. And publishers would fucking read 10 pages, something like, it's not good, take it back or whatever. Finally, this one publisher read it and they published it, and it won the fucking Pulitzer Prize because it's like the one of the greatest American novels or whatever, right? And it's like, you know, it's like a meta kaleidoscope. I mean, it was made by Alienation, about Alienation.
Great. I'm going to check it out. Okay, let's end this on a counter recommendation. In my dating adventures this week, a lovely man that I've been seeing had me watch Talk Radio. He is obviously a Gen Xer. This is a movie from 1988 starring Eric Bogosian.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you remember that Eric Bogosian was a stand-up comedian.
I don't even know who that is.
You don't know who that is?
No.
Oh my God, Jake. Okay, so Eric Bogosian is a stand-up comedian who was like an 80s fucking like club guy. I don't know how to explain it. And then he was also in Law & Order. See, the rhizome also connects. He was in Law & Order Criminal Intent, he was the captain. So he was Vincent D'Onofrio's boss.
This guy looks like Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah, he has like big eyes and curly hair.
Yeah.
So he was a stand-up comic. He wrote this movie, Talk Radio, and he starred in it. And it's directed by somebody important, I think. Hold on, because I'm bad with directors. Oliver Stone.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's an Oliver Stone movie from 1988, and it is about a talk radio like shock jock, right? Played by Eric Bogosian. But it is about the weird people who call him every night because it's like a call-in show, and it's like how he started and how he ends, basically. So it is very much about this idea of like the public-private life and then what he puts on the line in order to be successful publicly and what he loses privately. You should watch it, because even as I was watching it with this person, they were like, this is a Why You Mad movie.
Oh, wow.
Like, you should tell Jake about it.
Okay, yeah. I definitely will check it out. Man.
Yeah, we could do an episode about it. It's very good. And it's like about those people that come out of the woodwork to connect with this like late night shock jock because they don't have another outlet, Jake. In this time when there was no internet and there was no like you can find somebody on Reddit who's like you. So you called these late night shows to connect with fucking psychos and be like, oh, I want to kill myself and whatever. Yeah. Amazing stuff. So watch it. Let's talk about it. I'm going to order Confederacy of Dunces as soon as we get off.
Yeah, you should. It's great.
Yeah, I'm on it.
Cool.
And anybody else that has good recommendations for us, we're open to it. Email us at whyyoumadpod@gmail.com.
Totally.
Yeah. Anything else?
I have a story that's related to all this that I can't tell on the podcast.
Oh, no. We're going to do it after the show. Mic, sorry, guys.
It's so fucking weird. It's so good, but I can't. It just involves somebody else's privacy.
Yeah. Sorry, everybody. Yeah. One day we're going to make that $50 tier on Patreon where you get to hear us talking shit afterwards.
Maybe someday if this person ends up being down with this, maybe I'll tell it. But
yeah, no, we're not going to. We respect the privacy. Okay. Cool. Also, I do want to say, give us reviews. Go on iTunes, whatever it's called. What's it? Apple Podcasts?
Whatever it is. Yeah, that helps us. I found out a while back, it doesn't hurt us when people do negative reviews. That's not how it works.
Just if you have a number of reviews, it's good. Like, if you have activity, it's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So whatever. Thank you, assholes, giving us our one-star reviews.
Yeah, literally
it means,
doesn't matter.
Our overall review is a 4, because we have, like, some ones and a bunch of fives.
Yeah.
So it comes out to 4. It's fine. I don't care. I was an AP student who did a lot of acid. I'm used to being graded under the curb. It'll be fine.
Yeah. The C students of podcasting. Are you mad?